Hey, I want to share with you my I want to share with you what I got from Ken's talk. You've been made alive. Don't stay in the coffin. So that's what my note taking looks like. I thought I'd just share that with you. Thank you, Ken, for that good session. That was enjoyable. So what I want to do is I want to start with an exercise. And this is a mental exercise. And so what I want to do is give you some instructions. They're going to be very easy. You could even close your eyes to do this. It might help. So here is your first instruction. Do your best to do this. Don't think about George Washington. Now, what'd you just do? You visualized him, right? Okay, I told you not to. Okay, let's try another one. Now that you know what we're doing, try really hard this time, okay? I'm going to kind of spring it on you. Don't think about Bob Wilkin. See, so you're thinking about it. You're thinking about how much you miss him, I bet, because you think, what is this guy? Okay, how about this one? Let's do one that you've never seen before. Don't think about a squirrel wearing shorts. See, you're still doing it. It's natural. In fact, I bet if I asked you, you could tell me what color those shorts are, couldn't you? So here's the point. Now, you get this. When we say don't think about something, it's almost automatic that we think about it. Our brain, our mind, our consciousness is so powerful. It's designed to imagine. It's designed to put us in a certain place. And that creates a dilemma. Because the front line in the battle against sin is the mind. If you want to stop sin, and your first attempt is to stop some physical habit, you're already behind the curve. Because sin begins in the mind. Sin starts there. It germinates there. That's where the seed happens. And in fact, there's a number of sins that are actually just mental sins. They completely happen within the mind. Like hate. Like lust. Like coveting. And so if we focus on not doing these things, it makes it that much more difficult when we try to quit. So, don't think about who you hate. What happens if I tell you that? I bet you envision somebody. I bet when you envision them, you remembered why you're frustrated with them. Now, hopefully none of us actually hate anybody because Jesus told us not to. But think about this for a second. That's a commandment. I just commanded you not to think about the person you hate, and you did it. That commandment is not making us better. Here's another. Don't think about who you lust over. Oops. You just did it. Don't think about the things you covet. You see, this is the problem with commandments, especially commandments that are focused on mental sins. They almost push us into the corner to where we're thinking about them, even though we're trying not to. And this creates a really vicious cycle, which Paul is going to help us with. But first, he's got to set up why it's so difficult. Commandments to stop mental sins are instructions not to think about, just like George Washington or Bob Wilkin or those weird squirrels with shorts. It's a very similar problem. And what happens is we get into this cycle. Don't think about the object of my lust, then often can lead me to think about it. I think about the object of my lust, and then that leads me back saying, no, don't think about it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. And we get into this cycle. Now, here's the weird thing. This becomes a cycle within a cycle. You see, Paul gives us this image of the cycle that we live in, and he uses a term that the mindset on the things of the flesh is death. And so this is what a mindset on the things of flesh can be. Now, sometimes it's not because we're focused on commandments, but this is where Paul is going. That even though you may be focusing on these commandments, this can still happen. And this then becomes a cycle within another cycle. That the mindset on the things of the flesh is to live according to the flesh. And therefore, we get into this vicious cycle. How do we break out of it? And what Paul is going to show us today in this session is the inadequacy of focusing on the commandments, especially with the focus on those that look to mental sins. So, some believers thought the law could help them break out of this cycle. in the Roman churches, some of the believers thought that they could look to the law. And when we say law, we need to be reminded that we're talking about the Jewish law mostly here. And so they believed, not Roman law, obviously, because Roman law was very liberal and you could do whatever you want. So when we say law, we're looking to the Jewish law. There were believers in the Roman churches and in the churches in the first century in general who thought that maybe the answer was the commandments. That what we need to do is we need to focus on the commandments. We need to focus on the law that God gave to His people, and that will help us break out of this vicious cycle. So, to understand kind of who's thinking this way, we need to be reminded, and you guys know this already, but we need to be reminded of who was in the church. In the church, there were Gentile believers. Now, among the Gentile believers, there were both those who came from the pagan backgrounds, but there were also those that were what were called God-fearing Gentiles. And so they possibly would attend synagogue from time to time before they came believers. They were interested in the law. So they would be aware of the law. Some of them might even follow some of the laws, but they were still Gentiles. So you had that sort of main group, Gentile believers and Jewish believers. And the Jewish believers were pushing the church in this certain direction. That we've got this sin problem, and we think the solution is to follow the law. Now, this was a natural idea. I mean, this made sense. After all, from their perspective, that was kind of the point of the law, was to help us quell our terrible temptations. Here's what Zane says about it. Although Jewish believers did not constitute the majority in the churches on the Gentile mission field, their influence in the various bodies of believers must have been enormous. Their knowledge of the Old Testament scriptures placed them, in many respects, light years ahead of Gentile converts with no such background. They were quite likely to think that the law of Moses was an essential element in Christian living. But this was a serious mistake, and Paul now wishes to confront it directly. So this is the stakes. This is the tension that we find ourselves in when we get to the beginning of chapter 7. That he is looking at this possible answer to follow the law, but he's going to show us, guys, it doesn't work. Now, we will develop this as we go through this chapter because there's some distinctions that we have to make, but here Paul is going to show us in these verses. So let's jump into 7:1, and here's what it says. Now, I'm reading from the New King James Version, but if you have something else, then you can look at the screen if you like. Or do you not know, brethren? Brethren's an important word. Means he's talking to believers. Or do you not know, brethren? For I speak to those who know the law. Oh, he's talking to believers who know the law. Okay? So he's not talking to just any believer. He's talking to people that seem to have a focus on the law. So he is now sort of speaking to a subset of his audience. Doesn't mean that it doesn't apply to everybody else, but he's giving a focus or an emphasis on this group who is thinking that maybe the law is an answer to this problem. That the law has dominion over a man as long as he lives. Now, the Jewish believers would say, see, Paul agrees with us. The law has dominion over a man as long as he lives. That sounds like a done deal, but he's going to explain what he means. He's going to qualify this statement. Notice how he does that. For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if the husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband. Very simple analogy. Now, we got to remember when a metaphor is used or analogy, often it has one emphasis, one point. We don't want to take it too far because there were instances where divorce was okay in the Jewish law. But here he's using a basic rule, a basic idea to illustrate how we're bound by the law. Let's notice what he says next, 7:3. So then if while her husband lives, she marries another man, she will be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from the law, so that she is no adulteress, though she has married another man. Now, we know this is a setup, right? We know that Paul is about to explain his analogy or his metaphor. Now, what the Jewish believers who probably tended toward the law are expecting him to say probably is, see, you have to follow the law until you die. That's probably what they're expecting. And so, that is one direction he could go. Now, the believers that were Gentiles or not Jewish, they probably are expecting that, oh no, we're about to have our hopes dashed. We're going to all have to get circumcised. And so the law is a scary thing for some in his audience. So what he says next has a huge amount of importance. Notice what he says. Therefore, my brethren, he says that twice. He calls them brethren. He's reminding, we're talking to believers here. Therefore, my brethren, you also have become dead to the law through the body of Christ. This sort of deflates all of the believers who thought they had to follow the law. Wait a minute, Paul. We're dead to the law? What are you talking about? You're dead to the law through the body of Christ, that you may be married to another. So it becomes clear what he's saying here is we were once married to the law, but now that we've become dead in metaphorically in Christ, we are disconnected from that law, and now we can be married to one who has grace, to him who was raised from the dead, that we should bear fruit to God. Now, this is kind of my practice. Other people dissect things different ways, but I always look for specific words when I'm trying to figure out what a logical progression is. And for me, the word here is that. You'll notice he does a double that. That's my term for when there are two that's. So he does a double that. And so what that means is that we've got a three-level logical progression here. And so let's just kind of line this up. You have become dead to the law. So we're talking about there, most likely scenario is when you became justified, when you became a believer, you became dead to the law. That, so that means here's the purpose of that. You may be married to him who was raised from the dead. Okay, so that's the purpose. And then, but there's a further purpose that we should bear fruit to God. So that seems to be the ultimate idea in his discussion here, is what I want to remind you of is that you have gone through this so that you can bear fruit to God. Now, that's going to come up again, so we're going to want to remember that last phrase. Verse 5, for when we were in the flesh, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law were at work in our members to bear fruit to death. Now, here we see a similar phrase. We just saw the phrase bear fruit to God. Now we see the phrase bear fruit to death. So, in verse 4, we find out that our purpose, one of our main purposes, when we become justified and when we are, as he puts it, married to the one who's raised from the dead, is one of our main purposes is to bear fruit to God. This is, in one way, the purpose of your life. Everybody sitting in this room, that we would bear fruit to God. But your flesh, even with the law, wants to bear fruit to death. That's the natural inclination. That's the default position, is to bear fruit to death. Now, he's going to go into a discussion of how we begin to look at this problem. And by the way, bear fruit to death is a metaphor for sins. We've seen the connection between death and sin a number of times so far in previous sections. So, verse 6, but now we have been delivered from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the Spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. A couple of things that he points out here. Notice here that he says, we have been delivered. So he's going to use some personal pronouns. He's going to explain his experience, but now he's reminding them that, hey, this didn't just happen for me because I'm an apostle. This happened for all of us. That we have been delivered from the law. And what could that mean other than that they're justified? He's talking to believers. He's called them brethren twice. So we know that he's talking about those who have been justified. And when they were justified, they were delivered from the law in a general sense, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of spirit and not in the oldness of letter. Now, I notice another. Let's see, do I have a... Oh, yeah, I do have a laser. We notice another here, that. We have that logical progression once again. So let's just kind of break this apart. We have been delivered from the law that we should serve in the newness of spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. Now, there's some Zane has some interesting comments on this, but basically, this just means that the focus is not that we look to the commandments for our victory. The focus is not that we go down and we make a checklist of the Jewish laws and make sure that we're following. There's something different that we're expected to do. And we are focusing on serving in the newness of the Spirit, not the oldness of the letter. Now, I showed you this yesterday, but I really like this diagram because this feels like kind of what he's getting at. He's told us that the body, this main circle here, the body has sin and death as part of its nature. It's the flesh. But inside of us, once we're justified, there's this spirit life. And the way that we get this life to flow out into our dead flesh is not by focusing on commandments. And I'm using the word focus strategically here because I think that is the pivotal word. It all has to do with what we focus on. If we're focusing on a list of commandments, that's not how we make this flow. Now, he's going to develop this in a later section. I've got to leave it to one of the other guys to explain how that happens, but it's not by following the commandments. Let's read on. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law, for I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. Now, I told you not to think of George Washington or Bob Wilkin, or squirrels, or whatever. Here, Paul presents a very similar dilemma. He says that the law says, you shall not covet, which is sort of an equivalent of saying, don't think about the things that you are tempted to covet. And what he says is, it's not that the law is bad or wrong. In fact, we need the law in some sense to understand what sin is. But here's the problem. When I start focusing on the commandments and the laws, it leads me to think more about these type of things. And coveting is a great example because it happens in the mind, the main battlefield for how we are fighting our sin. For I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. So it's the law that helps us understand what's going on inside of us. Knowing covetousness. Apparently, this was a big deal for Paul. This was one of his main sins, I guess. Verse 8, but sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all manner of evil desire. Do you see that there? That cycle that he falls into by focusing on the commandment, it leads him to more and more thought sins or mental sins. For apart from the... and ultimately would then lead to probably physical habit sins or other types of sins. For apart from the law, sin was dead. Now this is interesting. We're going to come back to this idea here in just a second, but for apart from the law, sin was dead. So once he was justified, in a sense, he could stop focusing on the law. It was dead in that sense. We've got to be careful how we use the word dead here. I told you in the first session that there's a lot of words that don't mean what we think they mean if we're not made aware of it. And this is a good example. The law was dead. Apart from the law, sin was dead. Sin was dead. And so in a sense, when he was justified, he could stop thinking about sin. And in fact, it leads me to think that I wonder if those first moments after Paul was justified, if he thought maybe he was done with sin altogether. Now, he doesn't say that, but it does make me wonder, what was his concept of what would happen at justification? Maybe early on, he thought, finally, I'm free. Then to come back, he's going to realize, wait, I'm not as free as I thought. Verse 9, I was alive once without the law. Think about that freedom you first felt at salvation. At that moment you first believed in Jesus, you'd been given eternal life, you realize that you're declared righteous by the God of the universe. There's such a freedom in that. But think about a week later when you sinned for the first time as a believer or realized you sinned for the first time as a believer, how crushing that felt. You thought you were free of it. You thought life was different. But you realize I'm still dealing with this flesh suit. And it wants to do different than what my spirit inside wants to do. I was alive once without the law, but when the commandment came, sin revived, and I died. Now again, we got to remember the metaphor that he's using when he talks about death. In verse 4, he said, bear fruit to God. In verse 6, he said, newness of the spirit. In verse 8, he said, sin was dead. In verse 9, he says, I was alive. Paul is talking about after he became a believer. Now, I know we've already implied that, but this is really important. This is really important because if we misunderstand this and think that this is some instruction manual for how you become justified, for how you get saved, then we're going to misunderstand everything from here through chapter 8. Here, we look at this and we see that Paul is talking about a person who has been saved and is still struggling with sin. A person who is still struggling with sin, who's thinking, how do I fix it? Maybe the commandments, maybe the law. But at this point, it's very important that we see he's talking about the spiritual life of believers. In fact, Zane helped us see that when he said this in his commentary. The material in 7:1 through 25 is therefore personal material that Paul draws from his own experience with the law. Moreover, as the content of this experience clearly shows, this must necessarily have been his Christian experience with the law, not the experience of his unregenerate days. Unregenerate days simply means before he was born again. So he's saying this couldn't have been before he was born again because of these criteria that he gives, these aspects of his life, being alive, bearing fruit to God, walking in the newness of the Spirit. You don't say that of people that have not been born again yet. So he's talking about what happened after he became a believer. So, verse 10, and the commandment which was to bring life, I found to bring death. This is interesting. He expected, as a believer, and this is a window into what Paul thought apparently early on. When he became a believer, apparently it was his mindset that the law could help him out in finally killing his sin, finally getting over his bad habits, his coveting, his mental problems with these temptations. That's what he expected. He expected that the commandment would help him bring life into his existence. But he said, I found it to bring death. Verse 11, the sin taking occasion by the commandment deceived me and by it killed me. Now, I don't want to beat a dead horse here exactly, but, well, that would be interesting, but I don't have a horse. So I just think we need to see this again because some people, if you're going through this with somebody who's kind of on the lordship side or maybe, you know, has a different perspective, they're going to see things like this and you've got to explain them. You've got to slow down and say, now let's make sure we're clear on this, because some people will look at these and say, oh, so maybe Paul was an Arminian because he apparently lost his salvation. Yeah, yeah. So he did have it, but then he lost it because he said, it killed me and it brought death. What we got to remember is that what is the metaphor in the larger section? Now, we've talked about this in almost every section. What does death mean? The way that I'm seeing it here is it's not a loss of salvation. Clearly, we already said that. But in this passage, that death seems to be a metaphor for being dominated by sin. I really like what John said. It has to do with separation. And I think that still fits. Being dominated by sin. If sin is dead in a sense, then we're separated from our sin. And so it's that same concept. It does not mean a loss of salvation or a loss of eternal life. Obviously, it just can't mean that. And so here, it's a metaphor for being dominated by sin in our mortal lives. And therefore, being alive has to be a metaphor for living in accord with the Spirit. We already saw that. A moment ago, he said that we need to live in that newness of spirit, not focusing on following the letter of the law. So, here's the progression of this passage. This is basically what he just did for us. And for me, Romans is hard to keep in mind. You know, Romans is layer upon layer upon layer. So what I want to do is just kind of go quickly through the thought progression that he just gave us. So first, in the flesh, law aroused sinful passions. So this is talking about before someone's a believer. He just gave us that early on. He said the law arouses sinful passions in the same way that it will for a believer. But before we're believers, that is a general rule. Second, the flesh bore fruit to death. Now this can be true of an unbeliever. It can also be true, unfortunately, of believers. But second, that was his idea, that the flesh naturally tends towards bearing fruit to death. And then third, Paul died to the law. I'm suggesting this is the moment when he said that. This is the moment at which he's talking about his justification. He died to the law. I don't see how that could be any other thing but his justification. And so notice he set up 1 and 2 as sort of general rules, and then he, at that moment of his justification, he dies to the law. Now, what that probably, what that focuses on is his perception. In his perception, for a time, it seems, he was separating himself and not worrying about the law. But notice what happens. Apart from the law, sin died and Paul was alive. So there seems to be this time for Paul that he wasn't worried too much about the law. He was focused on the grace of Jesus, and he had not come in probably to these communities yet where Jewish believers were sort of pressing for law following. And so he had this sort of freedom for a while. But fifth, the law returned, and I'm saying it means to Paul's focus. So he, as he began to do ministry, he was coming in contact with these communities of believers who were Jewish, and they were focusing on, do we need to follow the law or not? And so Paul, feeling very free, then begins to think about, well, yeah, what is the relationship of a believer to the law? And so it returns to his focus. Number six, sin revived, which I'm taking to mean he realized he still had sin. You see, he felt this amazing freedom in the justification of Jesus that he had received by faith, but when he began to consider the law again, he realized, wait a minute, I'm not perfect. I felt free, but now I'm realizing I still have sins in my mind. I still am not perfected. And so it seems that this was a wake-up call, a realization for him. And then seven, Paul died once again, which I take to mean lived with sin. He realized that he was still fighting a battle against sin. He realized that that it was not a done deal. So, Paul was a believer trying to live with his focus on the law for a time. And here's what he figured out. Coveting was his kryptonite. He had a mental sin that he recognized trying to follow the commandment could not beat. It could not win victory for him over this particular sin. Now, I got to say, Paul is pretty impressive. If this is his list of sins, well, he's got me beat by a long shot because I have way more than him. Maybe this is just one of his examples, but this is the one he gives. So coveting was Paul's kryptonite. He couldn't beat coveting by focusing on not coveting, which is another way of saying he couldn't beat it by thinking, don't think about what I'm coveting. So this leaves us with a real cliffhanger. This leaves us with a real question. Well, then what can beat it? What can take us out of this vicious cycle? And for that, we're going to have to wait for an upcoming session. So let's finish with this. Sin wins when believers focus on following the law instead of focusing on, find out in the upcoming session. I stole my own thunder. There we go. Thank you, guys. And I'm guessing we have... Okay.
So we have come back in 10 minutes.
10 minutes. All right. Thank you, guys. Did you want to use this?